Coronavirus is coming for you.
Coronavirus.
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 Corona. Corona. The virus infecting us all.
Coronavirus.
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 The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hands off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
What's that ancient Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times. Well, we sure are. The media has become all coronavirus all the time. And the subtext of a pandemic is doom. If you listen to this show with any regularity, you know I have a thing for doomsday in all its glorious forms. I've done many episodes about it. It's fun to ruminate about doomsday scenarios, mostly because they're all bullshit. Way back in episode 7, Larry Preps, I went off on something called the Doomsday Clock. It's dreamed up by a bunch of clowns who claim to be scientists, and based on data they pull out of their own asses. They arrive at an interval of time, a very elastic interval of time, the length of which calibrates how we are to end the world. They first constructed their little cardboard chronograph at the dawn of the Cold War. They believed we were perched on the precipice of nuclear Armageddon. And the insinuation was, of course, that we had better capitulate to the Soviet Union or they would annihilate us, which was a crock. The Soviet Union pretty much annihilated itself, economically at least, with the unworkable system that is communism and socialism. I really never imagined that masses of people would actually be talking about a doomsday-like scenario as they are now. The closest I can recall to this level of hysteria was post 9/11. Then some people believed that there were these guys on the other side of the world who could take us all out because they had pulled off one solitary day of spectacular achievement in terrorism. And these guys, they wore black pajamas, and there was a video of them training on monkey bars, and people thought that their drippy, creepy leader with a ratty beard had super human powers. Turned out he was just a punk, and his men were punks, and they bled when shot or stabbed and blew up when hit by an RPG, same as anybody else. By the way, as I was researching this episode, I stumbled on a form of execution I'd never heard of. This show is a lot of military and pro-Second Amendment listeners, so I'll share this intel with you. This kind of execution is called blown from a gun, and the practice goes all the way back to the year 1526, somewhere in southern India. And I suspect that over the centuries, blown from a gun might be the origin of the common idiom we all use, "I was blown away." At first, I envisioned maybe the old circus trick with a man shot out of a cannon, which was a cool thing to see, but I was wrong. Blown from a gun is where they actually strap the enemy or the traitor or the prisoner or just some unlucky son of a bitch. They strap him to the muzzle of a cannon, pull the lanyard, and eyewitnesses claim that blown from a gun actually produces that cartoon effect where the head rockets into the clouds as the arms and legs blast off at the 10, 2, 8, and 4 positions, and the torso, well, that pretty much vaporizes. So I got curious as to how this would happen, because if they're just loading that artillery with a shell, it should simply put one gigundo hole in the guy's torso, right? Well, minds, creative minds about death and ordnance, set to that task. And what they do was, instead of using a cannonball or a shell, they load it with a powerful blank charge, or grape shot, as they called it, which I guess is kind of like birdshot or buckshot. But still, the process needed some fine-tuning, as this eyewitness account vividly indicates.
One wretched fellow slipped from the rope by which he was tied to the guns just before the explosion, and his arm was set on fire. While hanging in his agony under the gun, a sergeant applied a pistol to his head, and three times the cap snapped, the man each time wincing from the expected shot. At last, a rifle was fired into the back of his head, and the blood poured out of the nose and mouth like water from a briskly handled pump. This was the most horrible sight of all. I have seen death in all its forms, but never anything to equal this man's end.
Well, he never lived to see the deer hunter with those fountains of blood in the Russian roulette scenes. And I guess it wasn't just violence itself that was so unsettling. It was the aftermath of nature's janitorial staff. When they were doing mass executions this way, crows and buzzards would quickly lock onto the action and actually snatch body parts from the air. And our canine friends would cover the ground game, gobbling up whatever the birds missed. Now, this may sound sicky poo, but as I discovered the practice of blowing from a gun, I found it rather amusing. Doubtless it's something horrific to witness in person, a sight you'd definitely want to unsee. But in the imagination, in the abstract, it's kind of funny, like something from a Roadrunner cartoon, huh? Why is it that sometimes hyperbolic violence can be really funny? They call it gallows humor, and it goes back a long way. But some executions are less funny than others, right? Guillotines, they don't seem so funny, especially, I guess, because of the head left behind in the basket. Hanging seems awful, too. The legs kicking and everything. Although a lot of jokes have been made around hangings. Gas chambers and lethal injection are also pretty gloomy. But firing squads have always triggered a lot of jokes. It seems pretty quick. There's the blindfold, the last cigarette. It's outside, the sun is shining, the birds are singing. There have been a lot of gags around the electric chair. Old Sparky, riding the lightning, is the dudes on death row used to say, but none of them equal the over-the-top cartoon action of being blown to smithereens at the business end of a cannon. It seems the British were fond of the method. They used it a lot for suppressing insurgents in India. I could find only one real photograph of a guy about to be blown from a gun. The rest are artists' renderings, which, of course, sanitize the whole affair. I'll post them both on the show page at thatlarryshow.com, and you can see for yourself. Those English soldiers in their snowy white pith helmets and red and white uniforms are standing awfully close to the guy about to be blown from that cannon. You think they'd have on some foul weather gear, maybe a share a big length of plastic like the audience in the first row at a Gallagher show. According to records, those soldiers were called dragoons, which came from a crude pistol they carried called a dragon. Maybe the word goon came from dragoons, but word freaks can't agree on its origin. Anybody who would strap someone to the muzzle of a cannon seems kind of goony, huh? Or ghoulish. Why is it that only guys find this stuff funny? Women never seem to laugh at violence the way men do. Is it because they make the babies and have a stronger innate sense of respect for life? I don't know. But I do know that only males find the Three Stooges funny. And those guys kind of invented violent comedy, huh? A viewing of the Stooges would be every bit as accurate as a DNA test to determine one's true sex. We never say gender here. And I'd need to append the Stooges with a beloved Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. I've not known one female who dug those two adversaries, nor one dude who did not. And let me take this opportunity to once again diss the Disney Company, which I did to a fairly well back in episode 9, Larry Destroys Disneyland. You know, those big Disney features like the original animated Beauty and the Beast or Pinocchio or Snow White, they were pretty good. But Disney's individual characters, Minnie, Mickey, Goofy, etc., they were just lame. Once you graduated kindergarten, huh? Warner Brothers' Chuck Jones, however, with Bugs and Daffy Duck and Porky Pig, those guys were funny. Kind of like what separates Sam Kinison fans from, say, Stephen Colbert fans. But back to this epidemic, pandemic, whatever, this outrageously hyped and thus far exponentially exaggerated plague. At this time, there's about 3,800 dead worldwide, as opposed to that old boring influenza, which has killed 310,000 so far this flu season. But it just doesn't seem to get the media's dick hard. Why is there such an obsession with new in the zeitgeist, huh? Not only must we have the new model from Toyota or Apple or Samsung, we really only give a shit about a fresh, new disease. That same old heart disease kills 18 million worldwide every year, and cancer's right behind with 10 million. 1.5 million of us shit ourselves to death annually with diarrhea. About the same number die in car crashes. Malaria still kills over 600,000 every year. Nobody gives a fuck about that. How about starvation? 500,000 die that way. Where's the panic? Coronavirus? Sounds like a day at the beach. And already, the Wall Street Journal has reported that new infections in China have taken a precipitous drop, which may signal this thing is running its course. But if that's so, then what will the teleprompter readers scream about? And as much as coronavirus has crippled dozens of industries, from travel to entertainment, it's become its own cottage industry with people hawking all kinds of shit, mostly nutball theories, about how the end is near. In fact, that's what inspired the title of this episode, Thriving in the Vortex of Doom, because I saw some dude on YouTube standing in front of a whiteboard covered with scribbles. I couldn't bring myself to watch the whole thing, but his video indicated how, in only 3 steps, coronavirus will cause a global depression. And the title he gave to this maelstrom of misery was The Doom Vortex. Man, if that isn't some high-octane comic book material, huh? Can't you see Lex Luthor or Magneto or Bane or Dr. Doom himself opening up that can of whoop-ass on our planet, huh? Maybe the Doom Vortex guy is dead right. Only time will tell. But as financially savvy as he may be, he failed to use that fabulous catchphrase in the title of his video. Guess we all can't be good at everything, huh? But I'll post that too on my show page. All kinds of advice is coming from every corner of the planet. A couple of guys in Israel have some interesting takes on this epidemic. Rabbi Ron Chaya encouraged followers to prepare for the arrival of the Messiah. He said, quote, "All the warning signs of the coming of the Messiah are there, and to remain indifferent would be a tragedy." But then Rabbi Simcha Ashlag, he posted a video encouraging followers to drink the Mexican beer Corona. Quote, "When we pray and drink an alcoholic drink, the prayers have more force." Well, Rabbi Ashlag is my kind of guy. I embrace his message. As of this moment, why isn't anyone repeating that FDR quote about having nothing to fear but fear itself. The panic is real. Stock markets crashing, schools closing, vacations canceled, concerts canceled, employers telling staffers to work from home. Supermarkets picked clean of hand sanitizer, bottled water, and ass wipe. I'll go out on a limb here and predict the world will not end. The death count will be quite modest. And before beach season, this contagion will be fading into the archives with all the other end-of-day scenarios people love to wallow in. But here's where coronavirus will live on for quite some time, with asshole politicians. Already you can see these chooches in every state and every major city jumping on the emergency bandwagon and staking their claim to personal triumph over coronavirus due to their stunning and brave leadership. And now, all these governors and mayors who have not a single tangible achievement to brag about will be able to claim it was their swift and decisive action that averted wholesale death from the dreaded coronavirus. And who will be able to disprove those claims? This crisis, finger quotes, is not manufactured, but it sure as hell is hyped to insane levels, and the repercussions of that hype will likely far outpace the death toll. There are no supermen, there are no evil geniuses, but there are legions of naive people who can easily be persuaded into believing just about anything. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Right here, at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment, where each Tuesday or thereabouts, we connect. Stop by the homepage at thatlarryshow.com for a look at that Doom Vortex video. I'm pretty certain the Wall Street wise guys are buying, not selling. Fortunes will be made off this market plunge. That's a lock. And click the subscribe button. While you're on the show page, it costs bupkis, and you'll never miss an episode. Oh, and hit that Patreon button if you want access to me and my deep bench of advisor senseis. We have a pretty great track record of helping people fix what's ailing them, from the job, at school, even in the romance department. And besides all that wisdom at your service, you'll also get access to dozens of bonus episodes where we get a little more personal and contentious. Now, between shows, why not hang out with me and the gang on Facebook and Twitter? We have a lot of fun there and can keep you tightened up on what's coming, like this month's bonus episode. Just plug in That Larry Show to the search bar and you'll find it. My friends, this coronavirus thing is certainly real, but it is also being vastly overhyped by the panic pushers. Maybe every TV and internet douche braying about coronavirus should be strapped to a howitzer and blasted, and let the dogs and vultures take the best of them. Live streaming that would certainly take our minds off the epidemic, wouldn't it? I'll see you next time, and until that time, take no shit. Wouldn't wash your hands.
I'm John McAfee, and I love that Larry Show. We'll be right back.